If you burn through all your usual TV and film favourites during lockdown, it may be time to look further afield for something to watch. Walter Lazzolino quit his job as a TV executive in the UK and watched more than 4,000 hours of TV and film from around the world so that you don't have to. And he curates the best international drama in his series. It's called Walter Presents, and it's now available on TVNZ On Demand. And Walter Lazzolino joins me now. Hello there.
Hello.
You grew up in Italy. Was TV and cinema important to your family?
Yeah, very much so. Actually, in an interesting way, that's kind of what shaped me, because in Italy, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you may not, but in Italy, television is dubbed. So foreign TV, sometimes Italian TV is dubbed as well, but foreign TV is dubbed. And it's an interesting one because I'm not a fan of dubbing. I think it destroys performance and pathos, to be honest. But what's good about that is that as an Italian viewer, you are very familiar with the texture of international TV, because you're watching on a Monday night on national telly. It's sort of the equivalent of TVNZ. You'll be getting Desperate Housewives. And then on a Tuesday, you'll be getting an Italian show, and Wednesday, maybe a French cop show. So Italians don't make the differentiation between international versus Italian because everything speaks Italian. And so I grew up with a lot of really interesting international drama, albeit dubbed. And so for me, it was quite interesting because when I came to London now over 20 years ago to study filmmaking, I was quite struck with the absence of that tonality and that variety. I mean, there was wonderful television here, of course, but it was mostly English and American, and so other voices never came through, and so that's kind of when I started developing my dream of really setting up a channel that would capture all the fantastic stuff that never got to our shores.
And is TV preference personal? I mean, did you like the same films and TV shows that your parents and your grandparents liked?
It's a good question. I've always been quite attracted to independent movies when I was younger in Italy, because it's a classic sort of teenage thing, I suppose, and I want to be a writer and a director. But I've always really, really enjoyed big mainstream box sets. I've always found that really interesting. My background is in literature. That's what I studied at university, and I specialized in Victorian Anglo-American fiction, and I've always really enjoyed box sets because, to me, they are very much the kind of the contemporary equivalent of the traditional Victorian novel, in a way that they have episodes and cliffhangers in the same way that Dickensian books had chapters. And I think there's something quite charming about that relationship between the consumer and a story that's broken down and that makes you want to consume more and more episodes. So yes, big mainstream crime shows were all the rage, and I love them, and my family love them as well.
So how did you turn your passion for watching TV into a job in the TV production industry in the UK, which is famously competitive? What was your first job?
My first job here was obviously many, many years ago now as a researcher and an assistant producer, but I was a producer and then an executive for very many years in the world of factual. I worked at Channel 5 here, then Channel 4 as a commissioning editor, so I was responsible for a large chunk of commissions for 8 and 9 o'clock prime time factual with lots of brands, from sort of the Gordon Ramsay type and Jamie Oliver type cookery stuff to fashion, lifestyle, property. So that was a large chunk of my previous career, so to speak, and it was quite successful in that way. So I can't pretend that I didn't have a reputation in that environment, but I didn't really work in the drama space at all. So for me, it was a bit of a risk, but a risk that I thought was worth taking. I had been, my last job before I launched Walter Presents was as creative director of a factual company. And when that company sold to Discovery now 7 years ago, I sort of was at a crossroad because I had to make a decision as to whether I wanted to continue down that path, which I could have very successfully and quite well paid, or whether I wanted to take a leap and risk. And because I had some savings because of the sale of the company, I thought, I've got 1 year window here, which will probably never happen again in my life. And if I want to do it, I have to do it now. I have to jump, risk unemployment, and see if I can turn this into a job. And it worked very, very well.
And did your friends and family look at you a bit funny, Walter, and say, hey, you're giving up this great paid job to watch 4,000 hours of TV?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And you know what? Okay. Myself and my colleagues, Jason and Joe, always talk about this. All of us met. We were all quite well-seasoned execs in the UK. And we all got to that juncture point in our lives where we thought, we now actually want to do something that we love, and we want to work for ourselves and shape something as opposed to just execute someone else's brief. And when we started this, we all said to ourselves, let's give ourselves a year and spend all of our savings. And if it doesn't work, let's just stop it. And of course, you're absolutely right. It takes a bit longer, so it was like a year and a half, and our savings had run out, and people started to look at us a bit funny. Not only family, but colleagues. And I remember with my friends, we were saying, you know, your friends kind of go, especially when you've had quite a successful career and you're up for quite big jobs and you turn them down, then your friends say, well, why do you turn that down? What are you going to do? And then you say, well, I'm going to launch an international box set channel. And they all look at you a bit funny, as if you were saying, I'm going to become a painter now or a novelist. And so there's a slight surprise and a sense of pity when they kind of go, are you mad? And but thankfully it worked out.
And a lot of us regard ourselves as TV experts these days in 2020, of course. We're all used to beginning to watch a show, trying to figure out if we like it. Maybe a couple of things happen, you think, oh, I'm not buying it. How quickly do you, as a TV executive and someone who does it for a living, work out the good from the bad?
A very, very good question. I would say right now, pretty quickly, in the sense that I have quite strict criteria that I tend to apply, which I started from the very beginning when we launched Water Presents here now quite a few years ago. I started because there was so much content, and that's the problem nowadays, isn't it? That there's a lot of brilliant TV out there, but there's not very much super excellent telly. There's a lot of quality overall because a lot of investment has gone into the drama space, and so curation becomes really important. And for me, there were some very simple criteria, but quite strict, that I applied from the start. And there were three. And I always said to myself, if you tick two of these boxes, then it's worth genuinely considering a show and watching it all the way through. And they were obviously the quality of acting, writing, and directing. So the sort of the skill and the craft put in the production needed to be excellent. And so that was category number one. Then category number two was the success the production has encountered in its country of origin. I was always really interested in the idea of why is it that 10 million Italians watch this on a Sunday night? And what is it that makes French viewers go crazy? And so I wanted it, because this is, it wasn't at all a snobbish sort of elite subtitle drama pastime. I wanted this to be big, mainstream, and sexy in the way that big Netflix and big HBO shows are. So I was looking for successful shows. And then the third category was critical acclaim. I was always interested in understanding what triggers international awards and who awards what shows and for what reason. And so in my mind, if a show was beautifully made, that was always a precondition. And either very successful in its country of origin and loved by millions of people, or very successful critically around the world, then it was of interest. It normally takes me, I would say, about two episodes. I always give it a bit of time, if I'm honest, Jesse, because I think that some of the best shows are quite authored. And it means that they don't necessarily start with a bang. I often say, you know, sometimes a show starts incredibly well, 15 minutes, you're hooked, and then it peters out. And some of the best shows at times take a couple of episodes, or maybe three, to really bed in. And when you start caring about the characters, that's when you really follow the story, and it touches you quite deeply.
Yeah, we have a rule in our house, actually, that we'll give it four episodes. So often it seems that that fourth episode will be a real game changer. I was interviewing, actually, the former Prime Minister, Helen Clark, recently, and we got to talking, as you do, in 2020 about what we were watching. And she said she was watching this incredible TV show, and I'd never heard of it before. It was called Deutschland 83. Amazing. And then I see that that's one of the shows that you championed. Just while we're on recommendations, could you tell people about
that? We launched Water Presents within the UK, and it was incredible. It was a complete game changer for us, and it got huge marketing and press, and it's still to this day the highest rating foreign language drama in British TV history. It got, the first episode got something like 4 million viewers and won Emmy and lots of awards around the world. To me, that was a time where there was almost like the tipping point, where a show that could have been considered niche in some ways, because it's a funky spy story set in the 80s in Berlin, and so it's not an immediately clear premise like a murder mystery with a dead woman in a lake kind of thing, and yet that show became so popular that it indicated to all of us that the time was right to really celebrate international drama on a large scale.
I'm talking to Walter Lozzolino, who is the man behind Water Presents. It's now available on TVNZ On Demand, and it's the best of international drama, curated by Walter.
Hi, I'm Walter. I spend most of my time watching television dramas from around the world and picking the very best series so you can watch them on all four anytime you choose.
Angst? Salty.
If you're new to Walter Presents, don't worry. We got loads of award-winning thrillers to suit all tastes. From tense Italian mafia stories to beautiful Nordic noir.
Tu sai quanto buono un pedale.
And to help you get started, here's my beginner's guide to some of our most popular series.
It seems to me, Walter, that you are keen to dispel this idea of foreign film, foreign TV as punishment, as something to be endured. In fact, you like, you know, we should think about them in terms of blockbusters that just happen to be have been made in another country.
Completely. And in fact, you're absolutely right. And that's sort of gone away. When we launched Walter Presents in the UK in 2016, there was still a sense that it was a bit of a, almost like a snobbish, elitist pastime, right? So you like the opera, you like subtitled drama, you like independent cinema. That's not true anymore. And in a way, Netflix and Amazon, and I would say global drama, has changed that perception, because even shows like Narcos, which is partially subtitled, have broken into the mainstream in a massive way. And, you know, a lot of shows are consumed on your phone or on your iPad, and people put on subtitles anyway, because you may be at the airport, or well, not now, but you may be on public transport, you may be somewhere where you just need the subtitles. So I ultimately think that a great story will always out, that viewers recognize good quality and good stories, and so subtitles really are not an issue anymore, certainly not in the UK and the US. But I think Australian and Kiwi audiences as well have always been incredibly progressive. I think you guys have a real track record of loving and watching and consuming stuff that's made all over Europe and all over the world. In fact, you were the first ones to capture the sort of the commercial nature of really interesting independent creation, I think.
And you counsel against too many dripping taps. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, you see, this is my colleague and friend Joe, who's my business partner, has always said, Walter, we always have to make sure that whatever we launch, because we were always giggling about the independent cinema, which is sort of black and white Eastern European drama, where you have a 20-second close-up of a tap dripping to indicate that the main protagonist is depressed and may want to commit suicide. And we always thought, we shall never do dripping tap. We will have shows where there's action, there's fun, there's plot, and it's tight and beautifully told. But there's no snobbery or elitism about our principle. Our shows are incredibly beautiful and very sophisticated, but they are mainstream commercial blockbusters where we're here to really entertain and give people a memorable time. I don't like programming that is designed to make you feel intelligent at the expense of fun. I think that the biggest and most important thing to achieve, which, you know, the likes of HBO have done for years and years in America now, is to conjugate real quality with real entertainment.
How has the way that we consume TV now then changed our tastes for what we want to see on screen?
That's interesting, and it's changed a lot, I would say, because if you think about it, only a few years ago, and not very many at that, TV was entirely shaped by linear scheduling, which meant that a program needed to be, for example, in the UK, 47 minutes long on commercial TV, 59 minutes long on the BBC, and so on. And there were so many constraints, and you could only watch a series on a Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, and if you couldn't, you couldn't even catch up. I mean, it's only fairly recent that you can catch up. And I think that the notion of on-demand, and most importantly, of the streamers, have completely turned that upside down, mostly because a show now lands from day one. You launch a program, and from that moment, viewers want to be able to consume it on their terms whenever they like. And there's something exciting about it, because it sort of turned television into the new cinema. I remember when we started, there was still sometimes a snobbery, particularly in the US, where you were thinking, well, certain actors and directors would never direct television because that's a small screen. Yeah. That's changed so much. And the opposite has happened. Cinema has become a sort of returnable superhero franchise CGI box set schlock very often, which is good fun, but it's designed to flog games, to be honest, and it doesn't have much subtlety and in terms of psychological characterization and craft. And the great writing and the great acting and the great directing has now moved to the small screen. If you think, I often quote this, if you think that we now have on HBO, on Big Little Lies, you have a show where you have Nicole Kidman, Laura Dern, and Reese Witherspoon as co-actresses in a sort of small miniseries. That's incredible. You would never, ever have had film stars turn into the small screen for work.
Or Meryl Streep at Fifth Billing.
Absolutely. And then, there you go. You added that to series two. Exactly. But that tells you that. But these, and I often thought this for a writer and a director as well. How much more exciting if your brief is to make Transformers 4, right? That's then you have a fairly dull, action-driven story to be told in 90 minutes, maybe 100 minutes. But if you're an author, imagine the excitement of being able to tell the story of your characters across many hours and indeed many seasons, where you can truly etch the story you want to tell and make it really memorable and rarefied and complex, as opposed to having to compact a narrative. And then also with the streamers and indeed with stuff on demand now, there's no need for a show to be a 7-minute. If a great episode ends at 39 minutes, so be it. If it needs 47 minutes, so be it. So form has become freer and more sophisticated as a result, I think.
Do different countries have different storytelling styles? I'm thinking of, you know, Germany, we mentioned Deutschland 83, or, you know, Line of Separation. Is there something that makes those stories particularly German?
Yes, absolutely. And indeed, you know, whilst there is a general tone to European drama in particular, countries are absolutely peculiar. So, you have the French, for example, are wonderful at police feuilletons. So everything in France is sort of elegant and delicious in a kind of patisserie kind of way. They cook the stuff very nice. But that's true. So they, you know, the worst murders and the worst things may happen in a drama, but it's always pleasurable. It's always elegant and fashionable. The locations are beautiful. I was reading a review the other day on one of the shows that we have, in fact, on Walter Presents there on TVNZ, which is called Killer by the Lake. And it's about a killer by a lake, and it's in a beautiful location, which is Annecy. But the reviewer in The Guardian was writing about it and was saying, oh, terrible things happen by this lake, but I would still want to live there and be there on holiday. And so the French are all about the elegance and the charm. The Belgians, for example, I've discovered quite recently, I didn't really know Belgian drama very much before starting Walter Presents, but they are quirky and very dark. They have a very dark and quite morbid sense of humour. So it's different from, it's as dark as Scandi, but it's always a bit funny and quirky. So you cover your eyes with one hand because awful things are happening, but then you giggle inside because they have a wicked sense of humour about it. German drama, as you said, it has a very interesting take on its own history right now. It talks about it in ways that are very, very inspiring and not particularly nationalistic or tied into a mythological idea of themselves. They constantly interrogate the story, whether it's the war or whether it's a Cold War, in a way that I think is truly incredibly appealing. And then, of course, there's the Scandis, and we all know the taste and flavour of Scandi, which is, you know, incredible murders but beautiful designs and homes and kitchens. But I think the exciting thing about watching international drama that you were talking about, how different countries tell different stories, is that it's a slight virtual trip to the place, because every time, and this is what attracted me to Walter Presents in the first place as an idea, every time you're watching something, you're transported into that country. And for a moment you go, who is your version of yourself in France or in Italy or in Germany? And what does Jesse watch if he's in Berlin as opposed to Rome or Paris? And so on the one hand, it's you, because it's interesting, well-told crime drama story, so that there is a sort of there's a global international appeal to storytelling for television. But on the other hand, it happens with different fashion, photography, color schemes, different interiors. People wear different things. They drive different cars. And so there is also a vicarious lifestyle pleasure in my mind to watching foreign language drama, because, you know, much as I love British drama, but I live in London. It's like, and it's an extension of my life right here. But if I'm watching a drama set in Stockholm, well, for that night or for those 2 or 3 days that I'm going to binge on it, I actually become a bit Scandinavian, and I sort of feel immersed in that life and culture. And I think that's an added bonus, if I'm honest.
Have you seen anything come out of this part of the world that you've particularly enjoyed, TV or movies, something that you'd recommend for other countries to watch?
That is a very good question, and I'm awful like that. And I tell you why I haven't very much. It's because I made a pact with myself over the past three and a half years, really, particularly, that I would absolutely completely zero in on non-English speaking. And so my friends and colleagues give me complete piles of links and box sets to watch. But I've not, even very often here, people will say to me, oh, have you watched this big British drama? And now I try to stay across it, obviously, because I need to. But if I'm honest, ask me something about the Czech Republic or a sort of a minute tiny little corner of South Korea and I'll find something. But what would you recommend, though?
It's interesting. The shows that don't necessarily hit here in New Zealand often do quite well overseas. The ones that seem to show a quirky side of New Zealand life that perhaps New Zealand audiences cringe at a little. There's one called The Broken Wood Mysteries.
Like what? Yeah. Would you be able to make an example?
Yeah, there's one called The Broken Wood Mysteries, which is about, it's almost got a sort of a, you know, the Midsummer Murders sort of vibe to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seems pretty hammy when you watch it here in New Zealand, but apparently it's been sold to hundreds of countries around the world.
That's quite interesting. And is it because you think it offers those countries a version of New Zealand that you guys... That's so, you know what, though? That makes me think about what, one interesting point this makes is about, for example, Deutschland 83, right? Deutschland 83 has been a massive success around the world, as I was saying earlier, the awards, everything. And yet, it didn't do very well in Germany. And it's not, it wasn't a failure, but it wasn't a great success. And I've asked my German friends very often, why was that? And it's partly because probably the channel was not the right channel in the right slot and whatever. So there's always a bit of that. But it's also, this colleague of mine said to me, because in Germany, we probably, it was a bit too playful about the Cold War. And that was an item and a subject for us, which is still pregnant with pain and controversy and doubt and self-doubt. And the show was a bit too glossy and a little bit too internationally minded, and so we felt slightly alienated from it because it was a part of our history that we didn't quite want to position in that way. So that doesn't surprise me very much. That's interesting.
We better finish with a strong recommendation, and I know you're keen on New Zealanders checking out a Dutch thriller called The Adulterer. Why do you think we might like that one?
It's absolutely wonderful. It's a Dutch piece, and it's because I think it does. If you're familiar with a show called The Affair from Showtime, which has become a really big global show, American, this I think is stronger and better because it conjugates two things that I love. One is that notion of the affair, fatal attraction, dangerous liaisons, sort of 9.5 weeks. There's a sort of the relationship that's going to cause a lot of trouble, which is forever a fun theme. But it conjugates that with the notion of family crime and crime saga in a sort of almost soprano kind of way, because it's about an affair which should never have happened, and this affair triggers an incredible retaliation in a criminal sense. So it's the best of both worlds. It's a fantastic crime thriller, but also it's a very indulgent affair story.
Great. And there's plenty more too. TVNZ On Demand, the series is called Walter Presents, a curated series of international drama curated by Walter Lazzolino, who has watched more than 4,000 hours of TV and film before choosing some that he thinks New Zealand audiences will enjoy. Walter, thanks so much for your time today. Lovely to chat to you, and thanks for the hard work you've put into this.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.